Well, good morning. Welcome, everyone. This is an open meeting of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board on August 16, 2011. We want to welcome everyone who's joined us today in person or listening to the webcast of the meeting. Today, the board will take up a recommendation to issue a concept release seeking public comment on ways that auditor independence could be enhanced, including mandatory audit firm rotation. And before we proceed with the agenda, I want to note for the record that all board members are present. The first and only order of business is the staff recommendation concerning a concept release on auditor independence. To present the staff's recommendation on the agenda, I want to turn to our Chief Auditor's Office for the staff presentation. Our Chief Auditor, Mr. Bauman.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. We are here today to recommend for public comment a concept release on auditor independence and audit firm rotation. Through this concept release and the comment process, it is our intention to foster broad debate and solicit public comment on ways that auditor independence, objectivity, and professional skepticism could be enhanced, including in particular the advantages and disadvantages of mandatory audit firm rotation. Mandatory audit firm rotation would limit the number of consecutive years for which a registered public accounting firm could serve as the auditor of a public company. The concept release that we are recommending for public comment today also seeks comment on alternatives to mandatory firm rotation that could meaningfully enhance auditor independence. Joining me in the presentation today is Mike Gerbett, Associate Chief Auditor. In addition, Helen Munter, Director, and Santina Rocca, Deputy Director of the Division of Registration and Inspections, and Jake Lesser, Associate General Counsel, will join Mike and I in responding to any questions board members may have. Let me kick off this morning's discussion by spending a few moments on the critical importance of auditor independence. As we often hear from investors, an audit has value to financial statement users because it is performed by an independent third party who has performed required procedures and has a reasonable basis for his or her opinion. Independence is not just a description of the relationship between an auditor and client. It is also a description of the mindset with which the auditor must approach his or her work. One measure of this mindset is the auditor's ability to exercise professional skepticism, which is described in the board's auditing standards as, quote, an attitude that includes a questioning mind and a critical assessment of audit evidence. Over time, Congress, the SEC, and more recently the board, have adopted requirements designed to foster that required state of mind and ban conduct deemed incompatible with independence. In particular, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act included a number of significant provisions designed to bolster the auditor's independence from the company under audit. Those provisions included establishing independent oversight of the auditing profession by the PCAOB for audits of issuers. Since its creation, the PCAOB has conducted hundreds of inspections of registered public accounting firms each year. These inspections provide the board with a unique insight into the state of the audit profession and the conduct of public company audits. Based on this insight, we believe that the reforms in the Act have made a significant positive difference in the quality of public company auditing. Yet, our inspectors continue to find instances in which it appears that auditors did not approach some aspect of the audit with the required independence, objectivity, and professional skepticism. The board addresses audit failures on a case-by-case basis through its inspection and enforcement programs. However, as I indicated earlier, the concept release that we are recommending for public comment today explores whether other approaches could foster a more fundamental shift in the way the auditor views its relationship with its audit client. With that, let me hand the floor over to Mike Gerbett, who will describe one possible approach that might promote such a shift: mandatory audit firm rotation. Mike?
Thank you, Marty, and good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. The idea of audit firm rotation is not new. Since the 1970s, it has been considered by a variety of academics, commentators, and organizations. Proponents of such a requirement believe that setting a limit on the continuous stream of audit fees that an auditor may receive from one client would free the auditor to a significant degree from the effects of management pressure and offer an opportunity for a fresh look at the company's financial reporting. Opponents of audit firm rotation have expressed concerns about cost and that reducing the auditor's familiarity with the client would hurt audit quality. Clearly, such arguments warrant very serious consideration by the board, and especially so during a period of economic weakness and heightened global competition. Congress considered requiring audit firms to rotate off an audit engagement after a set number of years in 2002, during the debates that led to the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. In the end, Congress decided that the idea required more study and directed the General Accounting Office to prepare a report. The GAO's report concluded that, quote, mandatory audit firm rotation may not be the most efficient way to enhance auditor independence and auditor quality. However, it also stated that, quote, it will take at least several years for the SEC and the PCAOB to gain sufficient experience with the effectiveness of the reforms in the Sarbanes-Oxley Act in order to adequately evaluate whether further enhancements or revisions, including mandatory audit firm rotation, may be needed to further protect the public interest and to restore investor confidence. What is clear from the board's own inspections, as well as from the experience of other audit regulators, is that questions persist about whether more can and should be done to enhance auditor independence, objectivity, and professional skepticism. The concept release that we are recommending for public comment today seeks to solicit extensive comment on ways that auditor independence, objectivity, and professional skepticism could be enhanced, including, in particular, the advantages and disadvantages of audit firm rotation. The staff intends to obtain and analyse commenters' views on various overarching issues, including, for example, whether the board should be focusing its efforts on enhancing professional skepticism. The release also poses a number of more specific questions on various aspects of a potential rotation requirement, including, for example, whether the board should consider a rotation requirement only for audit tenures of more than 10 years and only for the largest issuer audits. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, the staff recognises that a mandatory audit firm rotation requirement would significantly change the status quo and accordingly would risk significant cost and disruption. Because of the importance of these issues and to allow for the appropriate evidence gathering and research by constituents, the staff is recommending that the board seek comment on the concept release for a 120-day period. The staff is also planning to hold a public roundtable in March 2012 to further explore issues raised through the comment letter process. This concludes our presentation, and we look forward to responding to any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Bellman. Mr. Garbutt, do we have any motions on the matter?
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Harris.
I move that the board instruct the staff to issue the concept release on auditor independence and audit firm rotation as recommended for public comment for a period ending on December 14, 2011.
And is there a second? Board Member Ferguson?
A second.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Harris and Mr. Ferguson. Thank you, Marty, Michael, for the presentation. This initiative has required a great deal of hard work by both of you, as well as the staff and our other offices. And I want to thank particularly our General Counsel's Office, Gordon Seymour, Jacob Lesser, Helen Munter, Director of the Division of Inspections and Registration, and Santina Rocca, Senior Advisor to the Director. As said, this is a matter of great importance to all the board members, and we began this in April. The first iterations of a possible concept release are in April. You've done a great job of recording all the various perspectives of board members, thoughtfully sorting through the issues, receiving the comments of staff. This is not an easy task. It's very difficult. And I think the fruits of your labor are going to be evident in the concept release today and the people that read it and respond to it. as to my own views, I believe that long association of the largest audit firms with their major clients is an issue that must be addressed in order to fulfill the mission of the PCAOB. One cannot talk, I think, about audit quality without discussing independence, skepticism, objectivity. Any serious discussion of these qualities has to take into account the fundamental conflict of the audit client paying the auditor. It comes up again and again in the halls of Congress and elsewhere. That leads to consideration of firm rotation as a counterweight to that conflict. There are, of course, considerable implementation challenges associated with mandatory rotation. The concept release invites study and consideration of whether there are ways to mitigate those challenges. But the reason to consider the concept is to resolve the question to which the discussion of independence, skepticism, objectivity always seems to return. That's the central question of this concept release. Will term limits set at some appropriate length, with due regard for implementation complexities, reduce the pressures auditors face to develop and protect long-term client relationships to the detriment of investors and our capital markets? That's the question. Will term limits set at appropriate length, with due regard for implementation complexities, reduce the pressures auditors face to develop and protect long-term client relationships to the detriment of investors and the capital markets? The idea of audit firm term limits, as mentioned, is not new. The debate ebbs and flows, but the contending solutions languish unresolved. In fact, the very size, complexity, and systemic risk found in today's issuer population, to my mind, supports the need for reconsideration of audit firm rotation at this time. With this release, I hope to challenge critics and proponents alike to do their homework, come forward with facts, and add meaningful depth to the discussion in order that we might hope to reach some resolution. The PCAOB has conducted inspections of audit engagements for more than 8 years. Our daily work is to gain insight into audit practices that formerly could be gleaned only on an ad hoc basis through reading of government investigations and litigation. Since the PCAOB has begun its work, our inspectors have identified hundreds of audit failures. We've published summaries of what was wrong about each engagement in the public portion of our periodic inspection reports. Though the recitations are dry, both the PCAOB and the firms recognize the seriousness of these shortcomings. To ascertain why these failures have occurred, we consider surrounding circumstances. We look for common themes. We try to infer root causes. For example, when we see auditors marketing themselves to potential clients as, quote, a partner in supporting and helping the client to achieve its goals, it's hard not to question whether their mindset might have contributed to some of the audit failures. I note that audit regulators in other countries have published similar findings and expressed similar concerns about weaknesses in auditor skepticism. But inspectors' reviews typically stop at the work papers, and even with time and resources needed to investigate more deeply, we cannot directly see into the minds of the people who make up the engagement team. The fact that our inspections cannot always link a specific failure to an absence of objectivity in the auditor's mindset does not establish that the auditor was unaffected by the pressures and incentives inherent in the system. To the contrary, our experience teaches that those pressures and incentives are powerful and pervasive. The public is aware of those pressures and incentives. They may well have eroded confidence in the audit. That's why it's important in my mind to consider now ways better to protect auditor independence. I don't suggest that term limits would provide a talisman to eliminate all inappropriate influences on auditors, but the concept release intends to drive the analysis beyond the conventional wisdom, which often stops with the assumption, and it is an assumption, that term limits would mean little or no improvements in audits and higher fees. To be sure, when auditors change, there may be a learning curve for new auditors. But consider this. According to Glass Lewis, the research firm, between 2003 and 2006, more than 6,500 public companies, or nearly 52% of all public companies, voluntarily changed their auditors. how did auditors and companies manage those changes? What did auditors and the audit committees that oversee them do to make sure the new auditors were in a position to provide reasonable assurance in the early years of the engagement? This experience should inform the responses of preparers and auditors to this concept release. The point is that the learning curve and cost-based issues that are involved in changing audit firms cannot fairly be described as uncharted waters. We know something about this. We want the public to have ample time to consider this matter and form reasoned and supported responses, and we will have a roundtable meeting, as mentioned, next March to discuss the information and the views we receive. And I look forward to the comments and the discussion both today and as in the months to come. I want to turn to my fellow board members now for discussion. I would note that we're going to hold questions after the statements until all board members have had an opportunity to make a statement, and then we'll go back around and take questions. Mr. Gelser.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I support the concept release before the board today because I hope it will trigger a wide-ranging discussion about auditor independence, objectivity, and professional skepticism. The release particularly invites comment on whether there should be mandatory audit firm rotation. I have serious doubts that mandatory rotation is a practical or cost-effective way of strengthening independence. However, with nearly 9 years of inspection experience under our belts, the time is right to step back and thoughtfully examine whether we need to deploy new tools to promote independence. Independence, objectivity, and professional skepticism give auditing its value and auditors their privileged place in our financial markets. Independence is a state of mind, not simply the state of being in compliance with a set of rules. As the Supreme Court has said, the auditor's public watchdog function demands total independence from the client at all times and requires complete fidelity to the public trust. Auditing is also a business. The professional imperative to maintain independence and the economic imperative to maintain client relationships can pull the auditor in opposite directions. Further, an auditor-client relationship that spans decades might lead to a sense of partnership or mutual interest between the auditor and the client. These kinds of biases could be unconscious and unintended. But if they exist, they can be corrosive of the independent mental attitude that auditing requires. This problem, of course, is not new, and there are already powerful forces built into public company auditing to foster and maintain independence. First and foremost, most auditors highly value their professionalism and their reputations. There are, of course, many examples of auditors insisting on compliance with the letter and spirit of the accounting and auditing standards over client objections, and many examples of auditors uncovering frauds. For the minority who are inclined to cut corners, there are criminal, civil, or administrative sanctions in appropriate cases. The Sarbanes-Oxley Act included measures to strengthen independence, as a buffer against client pressures. The Sarbanes-Oxley Act put the audit committee at the center, thank you, of the auditor-client relationship. In particular, the Act created the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board and gave the board inspection, remediation, and enforcement authority over public company auditors. I believe that our work has significantly improved audit quality. The real possibility that any public company engagement might become the subject of a rigorous PCOB inspection performed by experienced professionals with a deep commitment to the public interest is an important counterweight against the pressures that can undermine independence. In Sarbanes-Oxley, Congress also directed GAO to study rotation and its potential effects. In a November 2003 report, GAO concluded that, quote, mandatory audit firm rotation may not be the most efficient way to enhance auditor independence and audit quality, considering the costs of changing the auditor of record and the loss of auditor knowledge that is not carried forward to the new auditor. GAO also noted, however, that the newly created PCAOB was just beginning its work and recommended that the SEC and the PCAOB monitor and evaluate the effectiveness of the Sarbanes-Oxley reforms and then consider whether additional steps should be taken to strengthen independence. Almost 8 years have now passed since GAO issued its report. The board has conducted nearly 1,700 inspections during that time, and we've accumulated a substantial body of data about what can go wrong in auditing. I think it makes sense to follow up on GAO's suggestion and use what we've learned to revisit ways of enhancing auditor independence. As the debate unfolds, there are three things that I hope the board, and for that matter the public, will keep in mind. First, there's a lot we don't know yet about what board inspection findings might indicate regarding the connection between auditor tenure and specific audit deficiencies. Not all audit breakdowns are the result of the auditor approaching his or her work with a pro-client bias. Lack of technical competence or experience, staffing or fee pressures, insufficient supervision, deficiencies in firm-wide audit methodologies, and a host of other problems unrelated to engagement tenure are often to blame. Generalizing from numbers of inspection findings and client tenure statistics to conclusions about whether length of tenure causes deficiencies would be simplistic and misleading. It may be possible to draw conclusions about the impact of tenure on audit quality from our inspection records, but the necessary analytical work has not yet been done. Second, cost-benefit analysis should be central to this project. Firm rotation would not be cheap for American business. In GAO's survey, large firms estimated that under rotation, first-year audit costs would increase by 20% as a result of work associated with coming up to speed about a new client. Companies would also incur other, less easily measurable costs, such as the management time, effort, and distraction incident to changing auditors. Of course, the benefits of rotation could also be substantial. When lack of auditor independence leads to a blown audit, substantial costs may be inflicted on investors. But the board should not impose the expense and burden associated with rotation on companies that raise capital in our securities markets unless there's evidence that the benefits will outweigh the costs and that evidence is clear. Third, if new regulatory measures are needed to enhance auditor independence, there may be effective alternatives that would not impose the economy-wide costs that could accompany mandatory firm rotation. One possibility might be to empower the SEC or the board to require rotation on a case-by-case basis when a board inspection finds that long tenure and lack of independence have intersected to result in an audit failure. Another possibility might be to impose special obligations on audit committees to justify the retention of the auditor after some period of time, such as 10 or 15 years. In any event, I hope that those who comment on the concept release will not limit themselves to rehashing the pros and cons of rotation. I urge commenters to think instead broadly about the role that independence, objectivity, and professional skepticism play in auditing, and imaginatively about what the board can do to strengthen those key attributes. Finally, I want to join the chairman in acknowledging the contributions of the staff members who worked on this project. As I think you'll hear this morning, the various board members bring differing perspectives to this issue, and drafting a release that we could all agree on has been a lengthy and painstaking process. I want to acknowledge the contributions, as the chairman did, of Marty Bauman, the board's chief auditor, Michael Gerbet, associate chief auditor, Helen Munter, director of registration and inspections, Santina Rocca, senior advisor to the director, and Gordon Seymour, the board's general counsel. Above all, I want to thank Jake Lesser, associate general counsel, for his work. Jake is the principal draftsman of the concept release, and it's a tribute to his skill, eloquence, and legal sophistication, and most particularly to his patience. Thank you.
Thank you, Board Member Gelzer. Board Member Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The concept release we are considering today is one part of the board's comprehensive approach, as you have said, to improve the relevance, credibility, and transparency of the audit by all available and effective means. I strongly support that comprehensive approach and the issuance of this concept release in order to consider all alternatives. Recently, we considered the relevance of the audit by focusing on the audit report and whether it can be made more useful by communicating more information. In that context, I noted that investors want auditors to ask themselves what is it that, if they were investing in the company, they would want to know, and for the auditors then to highlight or provide that information. At that meeting, we discussed reasons that many investors believe their best interest would be served by changing the current three-paragraph, largely boilerplate, binary audit report to include, among other things, some of the same significant risks that auditors disclose to audit committees. And soon, I hope we will consider a proposal that would provide much-needed transparency into the audits required to be conducted pursuant to the board's standards, and specifically would provide information about who served as the engagement partner for each audit. Today's topic, however, involves ways that auditor objectivity and professional skepticism could be enhanced, which begins with auditor independence. Investors expect that auditors who are critical gatekeepers in the financial reporting system will act on their behalf. That is what we are talking about today. How does the board reinforce that auditors under our watch will act to protect investors? As the concept release points out, the audit adds credibility to the financial reporting process only to the extent it is performed by an objective and independent third party with no interest in the financial success of the company, and only when investors have confidence the auditor was in fact independent. For almost 40 years, professional auditing standards have stated that to be independent, the auditor must be intellectually honest. To be recognized as independent, he must be free from any obligation or interest in the client, its management, or its owners. Independent auditors should not only be independent in fact, they should avoid situations that may lead outsiders to doubt their independence. The SEC has long recognized that the capital formation process depends in large part on the confidence of investors in financial reporting. Accordingly, the auditor must be free to decide questions against his client's interests if his independent professional judgment compels that result. In the words of the board's Investor Advisory Group Subcommittee on Global Networks and Audit Firm Governance, the purpose of the audit is to provide investors and audit committee members confidence that an independent set of eyes have looked at the numbers reported by management and objectively, without bias, determined they can indeed be relied upon. If investors' confidence in that process is diminished or lost, the benefits of the audit and its costs are questioned. The European Commission in October 2010 issued a green paper on the role of the audit as well as the scope of the audit in the general context of financial market regulatory reform. Among other things, the paper discusses possible ways to, quote, reinforce the independence of auditors and address the conflicts of interest which are inherent in the current landscape, close quote. In discussing the future role, relevance, and value of the audit, regulators and investors worldwide, as well as leaders within the profession, recognize that the status quo is not an option. The drafters of Sarbanes-Oxley recognize that independence is the bedrock upon which audit quality is built. The Act established the PCAOB to protect the interest of investors and further the public interest in the preparation of informative, accurate, and independent audit reports, and it included several reforms designed to enhance auditor independence. For listed companies, it made independent audit committees, not management, responsible for hiring and firing the auditor and overseeing the engagement. Recognizing the risk to independence posed by the provision of non-audit services to audit clients, it prohibited certain non-audit services and require that the audit committee pre-approve all audit and non-audit services, and noting that the strong benefits accrue for the issuer and its shareholders when a new accountant with fresh and skeptical eyes evaluates the issuer periodically, it mandated audit partner rotation. These reforms have clearly improved auditor independence and along with it audit quality. They have not, however, eliminated the strong incentives that led some auditors to serve the interests of the company paying the bills rather than those of investors to whom auditors owe a public responsibility transcending any employment relationship with the client. Further remedies may be necessary and certainly deserve to be explored fully and publicly. Over the years, many alternatives have been considered to further strengthen auditor independence. For example, prominent individuals such as Paul Volcker and Michel Barnier, the European Commissioner for Internal Market and Service, have suggested at various times consideration of audit-only firms. Under this concept, in exchange for the statutory franchise given to the audit profession, auditing firms would perform only accounting and audit-related services and not provide non-audit services. Others have suggested lengthening the list of prohibited non-audited services. It has also been suggested the mandatory tendering of audit contracts could be required at regular intervals. While some of these or other alternatives may merit further consideration, they do not address the fundamental conflict of interest inherent in the system. The auditor is paid by the company that he or she audits, and as a natural and inevitable result of that arrangement, auditors know that if they push management too hard, they risk losing the fee, not just for the current audit, but potentially the fees for an unlimited number of audits in the future. In essence, they risk losing an annuity. During the debates that led to the Act, Congress considered mitigating this conflict by requiring audit firms to rotate off an engagement after a certain number of years. In the end, however, the Act did not require audit firm rotation, but instead directed the GAO, as Dan mentioned, to study it. The GAO concluded essentially that the reforms that were included in the Act should be given time to work, and the rotation could, if necessary, be revisited again by the Board and the SEC. I agree that the time has come to revisit the issue of audit firm rotation in the context of exploring all available options for enhancing auditor independence, objectivity, and professional skepticism. The inspection findings of the PCAOB, as well as those of our international counterparts, indicated that more must be done in these areas. As is clear from the Board's concept release, inspectors have raised numerous concerns about professional skepticism in their inspections of both large and small firms, and these concerns are cited too often to ignore. For example, in one recent case, an inspection report stated that, quote, the lack of professional skepticism appears to stem from the firm's culture that allows or tolerates audit approaches that do not consistently emphasize the need for an appropriate level of critical analysis and collection of objective evidence. Another report cited numerous instances in which the firm's personnel did not appear to be willing to sufficiently challenge or critically evaluate management's assertions, analyses, or accounting practices. Still another found that the audit partners and senior managers may have a bias toward accepting management's perspective rather than developing an independent view or challenging management's conclusions. As I've indicated, these are not isolated instances in our inspection findings. International inspectors in the last several years have reported similar issues with regulators from Australia, Canada, Germany, the Netherlands, Singapore, Switzerland, and the United Kingdom, citing deficiencies in professional skepticism as persistent problems at audit firms. For example, the Canadian Public Accountability Board, quote, found several examples of over-reliance on management's representations, close quote, and noted that while some reliance on management is inherent in any audit, there is a higher risk of inappropriately reducing professional skepticism in instances where there is greater familiarity or comfort with the reporting issuer and its historical accounting policies and practices. The United Kingdom's Audit Inspection Unit found that firms sometimes approach the audit of highly judgmental balances by seeking to obtain evidence that corroborates rather than challenges the judgment made by their clients. The Netherlands Authority for the Financial Markets stated that it found weaknesses in 29 of the 46 audits it reviewed and identified insufficient professional skepticism exercised by the external auditor. as one of the causes of these weaknesses. As was the case during the Sarbanes-Oxley debate, some investors and other interested parties have begun calling for enhancement of auditor independence through mandatory firm rotation. The most recent meeting of the board's investor advisory group, one of the group's working groups, recommended that the board undertake a project to establish periodic mandatory rotation of the auditor, for example, every 10 years. At a previous meeting, Meredith Williams, executive director of the Colorado Public Employment Retirement Association, expressed his belief that there would be huge, huge value in rotation, and at least one leader of the profession asking, who wants to be the partner to lose an audit client who has been with the firm for 20 years, suggested in a recent op-ed piece that we need to take a close look at the length of time an auditor can remain in office. And recently, Michel Barnier, in a speech to the Federation of European Accountants, argued that, quote, independence must be the watchword of the profession, and our first concern is the quality and credibility of auditing, close quote. He also said, when many companies use the same audit firm decade after decade, or for more than a century, that damages the profession. We need to consider the benefits of making it obligatory to change auditing firms after a certain period. We have to find the right balance between changing too often, which would damage the quality of the audit, and ensuring auditors' independence. Others have made serious arguments against requiring rotation, including arguments about costs, unique challenges for audits of multinational companies, and disruptive implementation challenges. We have a responsibility to carefully consider all the arguments for and against firm rotation in a transparent, open process. The challenge before us is to act responsibly and practically to promote greater independence, objectivity, and professional skepticism in the audits of public companies, and to ensure that an auditor's primary focus and allegiance is to the investor. I look forward to reading the comment letters for ideas and recommendations on cost-effective ways to fulfill that responsibility. I commend you, Mr. Chairman, for your leadership in bringing this issue before the board and for your willingness to take a fresh and comprehensive look at the numerous issues facing the profession and to consider various alternatives for addressing them. I also want to second Dan and your comments about the excellent work done by Marty Warden, Michael, Helen, Santina, and above all, Jake Lesser, whose extreme patience and competence is indeed to be commended. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll have questions.
Thank you, Board Member Harris. Board Member Ferguson.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the issuance of this concept release, and I welcome the robust discussion that it will surely provoke. Simple human experience tells us that any arrangement in which one party pays for the services of another is likely to lead to a certain, albeit perhaps limited, commonality of interest between the parties. That commonality of interest raises the question whether the party being paid can ever truly be independent of the payor, as our accounting and auditing standards and securities laws require. To use a humble analogy, most creatures don't bite the hand that feeds them. In the case of the auditing profession, a panoply of independence rules and professional standards are designed to counteract the potential for conflict that seems inherent in the current auditor payment model, and judicial decisions have at times imposed heavy penalties on auditors who fail to meet those standards. Indeed, the board itself has been the source of some of those rules. One of the questions for consideration here is whether those constraints have achieved their purpose, or indeed, whether they can achieve their purpose. Despite the numerous rules, regulations, and judicial decisions intended to promote auditor independence, the board's inspection program, now having included the detailed examination of several thousand independent audits, continues to reveal a troubling number of audit deficiencies in many areas, but many of which appear to be attributable to a lack of appropriate skepticism on the part of the auditor. This apparent absence of skepticism may be attributable to many factors, but one of which may be a subtle restraint on the auditor's willingness to challenge management judgments for fear of losing a client and a stream of revenue. Experience also leads at least this board member to suspect that while auditors may want to do the right thing and may be fully aware of the rules and regulations, no auditor wants to have a dissatisfied client or to be the reason his or her firm lost a long-standing audit engagement, particularly if the sources of the disagreement do not have answers that are crystal clear. The question being raised in this release have been addressed by knowledgeable people periodically over many years, usually without definitive resolution. So why raise them again at this point? There are a number of answers. Perhaps most important, the world's economic and business environments are rapidly evolving. Accounting standards have been evolving equally rapidly in response to new economic realities. Financial statements now increasingly include estimated amounts for highly complex assets and liabilities that must be reported at fair value rather than historical cost. The market values of these assets are often not easily ascertainable. As management's judgments about these items, as reported in financial statements, grow ever more important and ever more complex, the job of the independent auditor grows ever more difficult. Indeed, because there is often a high degree of uncertainty in these judgments, the auditor may frequently be put in the uncomfortable position of questioning strongly held views that management believes it has reached, carefully and in good faith. In this environment, it is reasonable to ask again whether the current combination of the auditor payment model and independence rules, even coupled with individual partner rotation requirements, is adequate to deal with the potential conflict of interest that appears to be inherent in the auditor payment model. Alternatives to the current model that have periodically been discussed are mandatory audit firm rotation, mandatory periodic audit tendering requirements, alterations to the audit payment and auditor selection model, joint audits, and others discussed in the release. Each of these approaches has costs and limitations. Mandatory audit firm rotation inevitably increases costs as a new audit becomes familiar with a new client, particularly a complex client, and may pose greater risks of audit failure, particularly in the early years, if the new auditor fails to find a problem simply from lack of familiarity with a client's complex business. Indeed, what data does exist on the subject of auditor rotation, most of which is inconclusive, suggests that audit failures tend to be higher in the first years of an auditor's tenure with a new client. Mandatory tendering would impose costs both in terms of time and money on firms making proposals for new audits and on audit committees that would be required to evaluate the proposals. Joint audits run the risk of either duplication of work or areas of appropriate audit inquiry dropping between the cracks. The question remains whether the current auditor payment model in fact poses an inherent conflict of interest for an auditor, how serious such a conflict is, whether existing rules and standards or additional rules and standards can sufficiently offset that conflict so that audits truly can be said to be independent, or whether alternatives, taking fully into account the costs of change, would yield a net improvement in auditor independence and audit quality. Finally, I'd like to stress that in this, as in all other instances where we consider regulatory change, we take seriously the Hippocratic maxim that has application to anyone attempting to ameliorate anything, of first, do no harm. We look forward to a vigorous debate. Along with my fellow board members, I'd like to thank our extraordinary staff, the Office of the Chief Auditor, the Office of General Counsel, and the Division of Registration Inspections for their time and effort and great creativity and patience in developing this release. Thank you.
Thank you, Board Member Ferguson.